Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett. And Doug, well, we had yet another Democratic debate in Houston this past week, all 10 of them. The 10 leading contenders got on the stage and not one word said about the economy and not one word said about Elizabeth Warren's false claims of Native American ancestry. Were you shocked by that, Doug?
No, you know they're not going to ask that, certainly in the Democrat primary. I don't even think any of the other candidates at any point, Michael, will actually bring it up, to be honest with you. I don't think you don't think that's going to come up. When it comes up, if Elizabeth Warren were to get the nomination, it'll be because Donald Trump brings it up. I don't think you're going to get that from the panel. I was surprised that there was no discussion about the economy. A lot of health care again, discussion at that debate this week and that kind of thing. But you would think the economy, they would at least, spend some time about it. Because after all, there is a Democrat view, I guess, versus the way that, the Trump economy is going. It may not be a good argument, may not be something they can really make. But I thought at least the people asking the questions ought to ask about it, right?
Why didn't George Stephanopoulos, the former Clinton guy, why didn't he ask about it? Why didn't David Muir? Why didn't Jorge, I hate Donald Trump, Ramos ask that question?
Well, I mean, we know what the Democrat response would be, but yet the audience, it's a Democrat primary, so they would love it. It said, yes, the economy might be working for some. It's working for the rich. But it's not working for the average guy. It's not working for the union guy or whatever. I mean, there is a way they would twist it anyway, whether, whatever the statistics are. The fact it wasn't asked, I mean, so George Stephanopoulos leading the panel there on ABC didn't really, they don't consider that to be an important election issue when most presidential elections are kind of centered about that, don't you think?
Well, James Carville said, it's the economy, stupid, famously back in 1992, right?
Yeah, and he worked with James Carville, right? So
he forgot that question, apparently, right?
Well, it didn't come up, and you asked me, was I shocked? Yeah, I was about that. I kept waiting for a question or two. I think the health care debate is really centered on, this Medicare for All that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren continue to put forward. They have different versions of it, but, it's even Joe Biden. Now, think about this. The leading candidate on the Democrat side, or at least according to the polls, was actually making the case that, wait a minute, this is going to cost too much. Mm-hmm. He was like, my plan cost a lot. I think it was $700 billion or something. He's got a plan. But he's like, Bernie Sanders at least is telling people that he's going to tax you to death, including the middle class, to pay for it. He gave him kudos on that, but then turned to Elizabeth Warren and said, you're not explaining how you're going to pay for it.
Has there ever been a debate, either Democratic primary or Republican primary or general election debate, where the moderators failed to ask a single question about the economy?
I can't remember one. That's a really good question. I don't think so. We have so many debates, now. There was a time where you only had a few and everyone paid attention to them. I'll have to admit, I don't always watch.
Could it be?
So there might be some, but I don't know. It seemed like that would always at least come up or be the – don't they usually come up with a way, Michael, they do a – okay, here's the topic, and then, for the next 20 minutes or 30 minutes, it's going to be on national security but they didn't do that last night.
Could it be, Doug, I'm just, speculating here, could it be that they didn't want to ask a question about the economy because the economy under Donald Trump is doing very well? Could that be?
Yeah, it could, but like I said, the Democrats are always good about saying, yeah, the economy seems to be doing well for some people, but not you.
So
they usually make that case. Now, they didn't have Donna Brazile there to give the the contestants the questions there, so we are you suggesting there's sort of a or maybe you're not suggesting it, but there's a possibility perhaps that maybe the people asking the questions are kind of getting with the party about what the subjects are? I guess they have to in some way, don't they?
I would think
so. To kind of lay ground rules. Yeah.
So look at the facts here. Since President Trump was elected, the United States has added almost 6.5 million jobs, number one. Number two, the unemployment rate, remains near its lowest point since 1969. African American employment hit a record low of 5.5% in August. And the labor force participation rate is 63.2%. That's tying the highest since 2013. These are all good things for President Trump.
No, I agree, but, you know, my debate classes and everything back in school, you know, say, well, take the issue and you can use some of these statistics, but they would also, as Democrats, would say, yeah, sure, but they're not high-paying jobs. They're just, they're low-paying jobs. Or they'll say the actual growth, when you average it out, that Obama had a slightly higher growth rate than Donald Trump is having. And, I mean, they would go through all these kind of various statistics. And, again, they would talk about how the rich, you know, whatever, the top 1% is raping the rest of us kind of thing. So, it's how you want to, I guess, to put it out there, right? I mean,
apparently they didn't want to put even that out.
No, I mean, I certainly think they should make whatever case they have, because after all, it's gotten down to the point that the Democrat primaries that I have seen are all about what they're going to give me. Andrew Yang's going to give me a monthly salary.
Oh, Andrew
Bernie
Yang.
Sanders is going to give me, Medicare for all. You know, I'm going to get free health care from Elizabeth Warren. Corporations are going to get tagged, and I guess somehow I'm going to benefit by that. I mean, that's what I hear out there.
And you'll get a hug from Marianne Williamson.
Right. Well, at least I get that.
More on Battleground.
Tom Steiner's going to impeach. He's going to impeach Donald Trump. So, you know, that's in the mix, perhaps. Yeah. But he wasn't in that debate. So.
More on the Battleground State when we come back. Doug Kellett and Michael Patrick Leahy here. Battleground State Report, back after this.
State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
So, Doug Kellett, Michael Patrick Leahy here. We were talking in the last segment about the Democrat debate last week in Houston, and I'm going to throw a little curveball out here to you, Doug. I know you love getting curveballs thrown at you.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Rhetorical
Let's just do
questions,
that, right?
But
okay. Oh, rhetorical questions. Those are you're masterful at those.
Well, this is actually not a rhetorical question. I'm gonna tell you something, some facts, and then just see if you agree with the premise that I'm about to say. So here's the premise. I think that Google is skewing their search results to help out Democratic candidates, but in particular, and this will surprise you, and I'll tell you the reason why I say this, but in particular trying to help out Elizabeth Warren. Now, you would think, well, she's kind of going after them, isn't she? Ah, yeah, well, what's going on behind the scenes? What's the real story? But let me give you some evidence, and I'd like you to react to this. So, as you know, in addition to being the CEO and editor-in-chief of Star News Digital Media, where we have multiple state news sites, the Tennessee Star and the Battleground State News, the Ohio Star, the Minnesota Sun, and the Michigan Star. In addition to that, I write regularly for Breitbart News. I had a piece this past week about Elizabeth Warren, you know, who's made false claims of Native American ancestry to advance her career. She's been making those claims since 1984 in that famous Powwow Chow cookbook that she claimed to be a Cherokee. Remember that?
I'm going to use that for tailgating this weekend.
We have a little sound effect to go with this.
I'm sorry about that. Phone off. Okay, go ahead, sir.
So the Powwow Chow cookbook from the claim to be Cherokee, Elizabeth Warren. And but she's been claiming Native American ancestry with no evidence, documentary or genetic whatsoever, to support it. And it's a lie. It's a flat-out lie. And she used it to advance her career. There's no question about that. She was an obscure professor of law at the University of Texas in the 1980s. She leveraged her false claims of Native American ancestry to get a job with the University of Pennsylvania Law School because they were, you know, trying to, you know, say, yeah, we have a minority. They put a false report to the EEOC claiming they had a minority on the faculty. Then in 93, making those same claims, she got a job at Harvard. And then Harvard claimed they had a Native American minority on their faculty. It wasn't true at all. So she used this whole issue kind of gets to the character of Elizabeth Warren. It's not just on her claims of false claims of heredity or her heritage. It's about false claims about what the reality of the economy are, the reality of healthcare, because she's misrepresenting on those as well. So, but this is kind of interesting, right? Because people are very interested in their own background. So, I had a story at Breitbart, as you probably saw, that demonstrated factually, with all of the documentations lined up, that Elizabeth Warren is a direct descendant of a militia member from Tennessee who was indeed an Indian fighter. That he was in the line of Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson's protege, William Lauderdale, who in 1837 formed a group, a battalion of Tennessee militia members. And Elizabeth Warren's great-great-great-grandfather, Jonathan Crawford, joined that militia and marched from Tennessee to Florida and for 6 months fought the Seminole Indians in Florida. Was part of the Battle of the Loxahatchee River in January 1838, and then was part of the Battle of Pine Islands, which now Fort Lauderdale, Florida, named after the commander of this battalion. And he was in the business of literally killing Native Americans, killing Seminoles in battle. And we've documented that he came back to Tennessee after that war, died in 1841. And then in 1851, his widow, Neanna Crawford, applied for a pension. First went through Bledsoe County Commission. We've got records there that she applied for that a pension. And then in 1854, it was approved by the U.S. Department of War. And we have records and that showed these records that she received a pension of $3.50 a month for her husband's service of fighting Indians in the Seminole War. And it's all there. And so that story, by the way, so I wrote that story, and it was up on Breitbart, and it had huge traffic. It was a lead story last week. Doug, if you did a search for Elizabeth Warren at Google right now, and you did a search for, you know, stories in the past week, would you find that story from Breitbart?
I have to do it to find out. I don't know. I'm thinking by your question that I would not find that
out.
Well,
right? I did it during the first 24 hours that the story was up. No, that story did not show up, even though it had over 20,000 Facebook shares and over 12,000 comments from Breitbart readers. Did not show up in the Google searches. I went through 12 pages of searches. Nowhere was that story to be found. Well,
I'm going to have to go to my Google Chrome and find out.
What kind of algorithms might be involved in that? And
so if I type in, Mike, Elizabeth Warren, Indian heritage or whatever, it's not going to come up, right?
Well, if you do, just type Elizabeth Warren, put it in quotes, Elizabeth Warren, Google, and do a search for the last week. It didn't show up. But now there are two other search engines out there that have some degree of market share. Now, Google's got, I don't know, like 70%. So if you go to Bing.com and you do a Google search for Elizabeth Warren, it shows up on page 3, that Breitbart story. There's another search engine.
Well, Breitbart, I'm just going to wonder out loud, but I think there's been this argument that conservative sites have not been getting this. The headlines or whatever when you do these searches.
Yeah.
Breitbart would certainly fit that category, I guess, as one of them that Google would have as a conservative site, right? I mean, that'd be part of it right there, not the story itself, right? I mean, it would be that there's, you know, if it's on a conservative site.
Might have something to do with
conservative,
it.
But, yeah.
Or it might be that they're specifically writing their algorithms only to develop positive Elizabeth Warren stories to show up in their search results. That could be another possibility.
Well, this is the whole thing about the big tech. I mean, you know, I could post that story on Facebook and see how long it lasts on there. Is it removed, you know, because Facebook has their own sort of issue that's been going on where they say that stories they deem as hate speech or they deem something, I guess, inappropriate, whatever their, you know, their guidelines are, that it might be taken down. I mean, I've seen people on Facebook. I don't know that I have had necessarily anything, because a lot of times I just simply repost something from a news site here or there. But I wonder, yeah, I've seen a lot of people say that they've had their posts taken down by Facebook. So you've got these big tech companies, Mike, that obviously are playing a role. I mean, we know they favor Democrat candidates. They favor liberal policies and this kind of thing, and they are maybe using, you know, their market share and their power, perhaps, you know, for their positions. But I guess I would ask the question, is that sort of an in-kind political contribution kind of thing?
I think
really
so. I think so. So just to test it, of course, we went to Bing.com, and that Elizabeth Warren ancestor story about the fact that she's a direct descendant of an Indian fighter who fought against the Seminoles in the 1830s. That story showed up on page 3 of the Bing.com results, and then DuckDuckGo, which is sort of the third smallest search engine out there, it showed up on page 2. So that suggests to me very strongly that Google has algorithms that are written so as to favor Elizabeth Warren, and that Bing.com and DuckDuckGo don't. Now, the twist on this is, you know, we say this to folks, and well, that's the evidence. Well, obviously, you know, Google, you know, she's attacking big tech. Is she really? What's her plan really going to be? And so this is the 2020 election is going to be influenced significantly by Google. And the question is, what's going to happen about that? Doug, when we come back, we'll talk more about that here on the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett back after this.
State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy and my co-host and good friend Doug Kellett. We're talking about how this is all going to play out in 2020 in the key battleground states. You know, if you go to battlegroundstatenews.com, you see a map with 17 states that are uncertain as to what their outcome will be in the 2020 general election. Doug, you know, about 13 states are going to go blue: California, New York, New Jersey, Washington State, and about 20 states are going to go red. We know that for sure. Tennessee will be one of those that goes red, and there's 17 that could go either way. Of those, probably 6 that are the most significant: Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, 5 of them. What's the 6th one? I've missed the 6th one. Ohio. Yeah, Ohio is the 6th one. Doug, how is this all playing in Pittsburgh?
Well, I haven't been to Pittsburgh lately, so we may have to ask them. But I keep seeing a lot of polls, and they're all national kind of polls, less than 1,000 people being surveyed, right? That's got 5 of the Democrat candidates in hypothetical matchup beating Trump. But I don't see a lot of, you know, polls being done in these individual states, as you point out, is what really will matter in the Electoral College and whether Donald Trump wins re-election. But I keep seeing these, you know, these various polls out there. I think ABC was the last one, you know, where, again, he's not, you know, he's not really breaking much more than 43%, I think, in some of these polls. But that's, again, nationally, and it just matters how he does in these states. Now, I'll say about Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh and these kind of things, I can't see how in Pennsylvania what Elizabeth Warren specifically said this week, and really everyone except maybe Joe Biden, and even Biden is in some of this category about the climate change thing and the attack on energy, that it being the coal industry, natural gas. I mean, all these, I do not understand, and maybe you can help me because, you know, you look at these things closer, but why is the attack on natural gas so prevalent now? You know, Portland is apparently, I think, maybe it's Seattle going to join San Francisco, and no new homes that are built, are they going to be able to be connected to natural gas?
That's crazy. It's a clean-burning fuel.
Right, right. I know
it's
they don't
utterly
like fracking.
Crazy.
Right, right. I know they don't like fracking, and fracking is a big issue in Ohio, for example. And so the Democrats, I think, are hurting themselves in possibly winning election in some of these key states because these are energy states.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one thing, a fact of an election that happened this past week, I'd really like to get your reaction to it. So in North Carolina, there were two special elections last week. In the third congressional district, which is kind of a Republican district, Walter Jones had served there for many, many years, and he died unexpectedly at the age of 76 in January. And so there was a special election in the third congressional district. I think that runs sort of in the northeastern section of North Carolina, I think from the coast over a little bit to the northern border with Virginia. And Greg Murphy won that easily, 62% to 30%, the Dr. Greg Murphy, a member of the Freedom Caucus. But the one that we followed most closely, Doug, was the 9th Congressional District, the do-over election. And that in the district that extends from Charlotte as its western boundary all the way to sort of Fayetteville on its eastern boundary, that election turnout and the outcome there was very surprising to many people in the mainstream media. And Doug, you know what I thought was funny? So you had, this was the do-over election, right? The Democrat, Dan McCready, who ran, he's a veteran who started up this company that does solar energy implementations. And he raised a lot of money from various hedge funds, et cetera. And they do, you know, solar energy projects. And most of those subsidized by state or federal government both ways. But he's, you know, generally considered a good guy and a military veteran. Had served in Iraq, I believe. So he ran in 2018 in the midterm there against Dr. Mark Harris, the GOP nominee who defeated Robert Pittenger in the May 2018 primary. And on Election Day in November 18, Harris had 905 votes more than McCready. McCready even conceded, but guess what? There's more to the story, as you know.
Yeah, I mean, this has always been crazy, right? I mean, this whole way this came about?
Yeah. So what happened is there was a guy in one of the 8 counties in that district, Leslie McDowell, I think is his name, who had spent his career basically doing what was called ballot harvesting for Democrats. And basically, that's going out with sort of absentee ballots and getting people to fill them out and then take them into the county. And there's all sorts of rules and regulations as to how you can and can't do those things. And apparently, the way he did that when he was working for Democrats for like 2 decades was not a problem, okay? But when he started doing it for the consultant who was the consultant to the Harris campaign, apparently it was a problem. And maybe it was, but there were allegations of ballot irregularities. Those were brought to the fore. And by the end of November of 2018, the North Carolina State Board of Elections refused to certify that election. So they said, okay, we're going to do it all over again. And people said, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was amazing. The guy with the most votes didn't get the, didn't get put in office there. So,
well, I think.
We did it. Yeah, I mean, and there was, like, I remember you talking about this quite a bit at the time. There was, you know, just the cloud sort of hanging over this whole election.
There was, and, you know, you always want fair and honest elections. And, you know, I don't know the details of the facts on it.
But what happens if you don't have a fair and honest election, right?
You have a do-over, which is right. Apparently what happened.
Isn't
here.
Isn't that what Al Gore wanted when he and Bush... he said he wanted a do-over. Yeah.
But, Doug, now, if we want to be honest about do-overs... I mean, the Democrats have been, you know, demanding a do-over of the November 2016 presidential election since 3 o'clock that morning when all the anchors said, Donald Trump is the next president.
I think it was a little later than that because the shock had set in, and it took a while before they came out of their bewilderment, I think. But you're right. It wasn't long after that the impeachment started.
Yeah.
Do-overs. To beat the call here.
Do-overs.
I want to ask you, though, you were going to say something about this district, and here's something people have been asking me on Facebook, because the media thought that perhaps a Democrat might win. It was, you know, everything I heard was like too close to call, well, you know, in these polls or whatever. But didn't Donald Trump win that district by a big margin? And so the issue is, do you see that as a bellwether, that it was a lot closer than maybe when he, what, won 11 or 12 points or something like that?
So, as always, Doug, you have hit the nail on the head. So here's my take on this. Before the election results in this special election came out, all the mainstream media call this a bellwether election for the reasons you just pointed out. It was a bellwether election that would set the tone for the 2020 general election at the presidential level, because they thought at the time that the Democrat, Dan McCready, would win. And then there was a poll that came out. The most recent poll showed him up by 4 points. Now, as I pointed out, there's a problem with that poll showing McCready up by 4 points. One of the problems was a thing called sampling. This is a district, as you pointed out, that Donald Trump won in 2016 by 12 points. He only won the state by 3 points, but he won that district by 12 points. And the Cook Report, the Partisan Voter Index, had rated it as Republican plus 8. So the poll that showed McCready up by 4 points had 10% more Democrats than Republicans.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that is, and I took some, you know, when I was in college way, way back, you know, I took some classes about, you know, the polling and how they do all this stuff. I thought it was kind of interesting. But what I can't understand about modern day polling, Mike, is that what advantage do they have of being wrong? In other words, what by oversampling, and as you can easily point out these discrepancies in some of these polls, what real advantage is that for them as a polling group that's actually, you know, doing this stuff? Isn't it better to be accurate or be close to accurate as possible rather than have this
kind
of...
Well, when your client is primarily interested in promoting a narrative, right, and the narrative here being, oh, the narrative is, oh, it's a bellwether and Donald Trump's going to lose. You know, that election, when he was going to lose it, was a bellwether. After the Republican won it, because Trump helped out, it was suddenly an outlier. We'll talk about that more when we come back on the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy with Doug Kellett. Back after this.
State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
And welcome back. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett here. We're talking about polling as narrative. And the election in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, the special election, good example of that. Of course, the poll, the most recent the poll before the election showed, oh, the Democrat McCready is going to win by 4 points, and they oversampled Democrats because that's the narrative they want to create. But back to your point, I think you nailed it, Doug. Donald Trump is the one who made that election happen as a Republican victory, because on the night before the election, he went down to Fayetteville, North Carolina, and held a big, raucous rally. It was a big rally, lots of enthusiasm. And when the results started coming in, guess what, Doug? People who lived in that county, particularly rural Democrats, voted for the Republican Dan Bishop over Dan McCready. It was very demonstrable.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, we were talking a moment ago about the media certainly played it as a bellwether. I guess that's the term they like to use, or sort of an indicator of the presidential election coming up. I'm wondering anymore, Mike, and you probably can point them out, but are there any real districts, congressional districts, that are that? Because, you know, in the last 20, 30 years, there's been this change in the way we redistrict congressional seats because the African-American caucus in the Democrats kind of worked with Republicans, you know, to have more safe seats of minorities. And by doing that, you also created other districts that were more, say, red. And we don't have a lot of mixture of Republicans, moderates, and Democrats in a lot of these districts, right? I mean, so is any district really a good indicator about, you know, how things are going to turn out in a presidential race?
Well, I can tell you the mainstream media definition of a bellwether election. It's a congressional seat or Senate seat currently held by a Republican where a Democrat wins. That's it. Oh, bellwether.
And there were a number of those, right, in the midterm elections, right?
Yeah, the midterms.
Because Nancy Pelosi mentions them, what, 6 or 7 seats? So, I mean, yeah, it does happen. But then we also know that midterm elections tend to swing against the party that's the incumbent in the White House. I don't know why, but it just seems to do that every time. So, again, is that a real indicator that there's some big change in, you know, in the wind that's brewing about this? I don't necessarily think so. You quote this often. I think it was Tip O'Neill you quote saying all politics is local, mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's really true, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Now, I'm going to make an argument here that, in fact, the outcome of that North Carolina special election in which Republican Dan Bishop defeated Democrat Dan McCready by 4,000 votes, that's 2 points. That's about 3,000 more than the midterm election where the Republican candidate there, Mark Harris, had more votes in the uncertified election over Dan McCready, the same guy, 905 votes. See, so Bishop did 3,000 votes better in that same district. Now, here is what I'm going to say. I think it is a bellwether. And the bellwether indicator is that the Democratic game plan that worked in the midterm elections is unlikely to work in the 2020 general election. And here's my reasoning here. And you saw this a lot, Doug. All of those, the prototype of a Democratic candidate who won defeated Republicans in that when they took over the House in 2018 was this younger, right? And probably more women, but also some men. But you had to be younger. You had to be a military veteran, and you had to be tough on crime in some way. I mean, the idea.
Yeah,
would
they were not far lefties.
Well,
right, is what you're saying there. They weren't the Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party, right?
No, they were in these marginal districts that could go either way. And there's not that many. There's maybe 30 or 40 that fit in that category. But, you know, their ideal candidate would be a woman, combat veteran, who then went on to serve as an assistant district attorney, who would basically say, well, I'm not going to follow Nancy Pelosi. I'm going to go my own way. That was their prototype. Here's what happened. Here's why this election in North Carolina's 9th congressional district, where the candidate who fit that profile, Dan McCready, lost despite spending an awful lot of money. There's like $14 million spent on that election, $7 million on each side pretty much is the way it played out. But so he was the prototype. He was a Marine, a veteran of combat in Iraq, a business guy. Now, it was a sort of a, you know, crony capitalist sort of business, solar energy with, you know, tax credits and all that sort of stuff making it. But still, nonetheless, he could claim he was a business guy. Why did he not win? Why did he lose? And I think there's two reasons. Number one, I think voters have kind of woken up to the fact that they can look at what all those military veteran Democrats who got elected, what they did. They are in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi's socialist agenda. They are in lockstep with the Squad, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar. Somebody did something on 9/11. And Rashida Tlaib, you know, was dropping bad words all the time and, you know, the pro-Palestinian. Had the Palestinian flag when she was elected, not the American flag. People don't like that. People do not like that. And here, and then you had the sanctuary cities, the left wing sheriff in Mecklenburg County, the Charlotte part of North Carolina, was doing the same kind of defiance that the now defeated incumbent mayor of Nashville, David Brierley, was pushing. Not going over so well, you know, comply with the law. And so there's McCready, fit the profile, but he would not speak out against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. He would not speak out against the socialist agenda. He would not speak out against Ilhan Omar. And that was the same pattern of that all these veterans that got elected. They were silent. They're in lockstep with the impeachment left-wing socialist agenda game plan.
I agree. I just think, Mike, too, that you look at the argument for Democrats as far as running. I agree. That's why if it's anybody but Joe Biden on the top of the Democrat ticket, then voters are going to look at a very left-wing sort of progressive party ticket versus Donald Trump. And so I don't think it wears as well as you're pointing out. I think the other thing, and it's part of their motivation, would be, okay, if they're not going to impeach Donald Trump during this term because, the election's coming up, doesn't look like it's going to, part of their motivation is, okay, if Trump wins re-election, you've got to give us the Congress, right? You got to win the Senate and the House. You got to get out there, turn out to vote so we can impeach the guy, get rid of him. I think, don't you think that's part of it? I mean, you've said it many times, this is going to be a turnout election, right? Donald Trump's going to have to turn out the vote for him. Democrats are going to have to use whatever they can, whatever weapon is at their disposal, impeachment being one of them, to get their people out.
Yeah, but what I think is where this whole thing is turning, the momentum is turning, is there is a tactic, a strategy that Republicans can use to win in these congressional races. And Dan Bishop, a very good candidate, did it. First, here's what he did. They went after Dan McCready for refusing to come out against the socialist agenda. He said nothing, the old Sergeant Schultz line. I know nothing. That was his answer when Dan Bishop accused him of being part of the sanctuary trifecta, the Democratic governor who basically vetoed a bill that would have required local county sheriffs to cooperate with ICE federal agents enforcing immigration law. That was part of the trifecta. Sheriff Gary McFadden of Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, who implemented those policies. And then Dan McCready, who would not repudiate those policies. Big mistake on McCready's part. Big mistake. And then they ran this piece that tied him to the squad, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley. And he didn't repudiate them. So there, and he's kind of defenseless. His problem was he couldn't, because a lot of the money that was coming into that race to help him was coming from supporters of the squad, was coming from supporters of sanctuary cities. So he was in a tough spot, couldn't do it. That was the first part of the 1-2 punch. And the next part was President Donald Trump came in, and man, did he come in. And he got the vote out. I mean, he took probably more credit than he should, but it's Donald Trump, so he's, I mean, come on.
Well, that's going to happen.
By definition.
Right.
Trump is always right.
By his own definition, right?
Yeah, he's always right, never wrong. But nonetheless, he's the one. It was Donald Trump. He's the one who won that election. What does that tell you?
Well, he's gonna have to go campaign hard for sure for himself and also for members of Congress in the 2020 election. I don't think there's any question about that, because it's going to be, I think, more intense, I really think, than the Hillary Clinton Donald Trump election. I think a lot of people were kind of coasting during that election, thinking Hillary Clinton was going to win, and they didn't really.
Yeah. Well, they're going to come out.
I think conservatives. Or people leaning conservative, said at the last minute, I just can't go for Hillary. I've got to get out there and make sure. But I'm not sure that was the same intensity on the other side, right? And that might be a Joe Biden problem, that when it gets down to, if Biden were to win the nomination, that the intensity of Democrats, might not be there. Wouldn't take much.
So here's where it looks to me 14 months out, if I had to take a guess as to what the Democratic ticket would be. I'll give you two guesses, all right? Guess number one, Biden-Warren would be the ticket. Biden-Warren. Okay, that's guess number one. And I'll get your guesses, too. Guess number two, Warren Buttigieg or Warren Booker. Either one, I think. Those are my guesses. What do you think? What do you think?
I still think Biden and Harris. I don't know why, but I just feel like the reason I believe that is because I think Kamala Harris will not get enough support to win the nomination. But I think there's a great desire to have a female on the ticket, and especially an African-American female that would be set up to be president next time around. Because I think the Democrats would look at Joe Biden as someone that's probably going to be a one-term guy.
Yeah.
Not that he might do just such a poor job he'd get kicked out, but I mean...
he might not last past one term.
Well, I mean, I just think age-wise, it would be... I guess he'd be 80, right? I mean, if he was running for the second term. So, yeah, I think that... I mean, last night, right? He says... and I still haven't understood the story. I've watched it. I mean, I've watched it and I've listened to it a couple of times where he was saying that... You know, the parents should leave on a record player on at night for the poor kids to somehow make them better. And well, first
record
of all, the problem,
player.
Right? The problem with that is record player.
Record player.
Sound like something I would say, right? I mean, they don't even know what that is. You got to say iPod or something like that, Joe. And then I don't know why that would help poor kids. Anyway, that's the other problem with that that comedy made. But so, you know, maybe a bit out of touch, but they would certainly tolerate that. And would also be intensity for African-Americans if Kamala Harris were on the ticket, or maybe Cory Booker, but I think Kamala would get them more energized.
All right, well, we'll see. Hey, Doug Kellett, thanks for another wonderful session of the Battleground State Report. Back next week, and there'll be a lot more happening, a lot more craziness, and, you know, we'll try and get Marianne Williamson on, don't you think, next time? Wouldn't she be a good guest?
Well, she'd give us a hug, which would be awesome.
Give us a hug. Yeah. Conservatives nicer to her than liberals. We'll demonstrate that's the case. Thanks, Doug, for joining us. And this is the Battleground State Report. We'll be talking to you next week. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.